You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I am your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm thrilled to have my guest, Dr. Bruce Lipton. Dr. Lipton is an internationally recognized authority in bridging science and spirit. His reputation precedes him. I think we all know who he is. He's been a guest speaker on dozens of TV and radio shows, as well as keynote presenter for national conferences. Tonight, we'll be discussing his new book, which was co-authored with Steve Behrman, who's fondly known as Swami Beyond Ananda, which is titled Spontaneous Evolution. And the second part of the title is Our Positive Future and a Way to Get There from Here. So we'll be talking about that tonight. You can find his work at www.brucelipton.com. So let's welcome Bruce to the show now. Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Oh, wonderful, Lance. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Oh, the pleasure is mine, believe me. What a wonderful book. And when Steve was on a few weeks ago, he said to say hello to you. So I just want, in case he's listening, I just wanted to get that on the record. He said to say hello.
He's a swami. He's always out there.
Oh, yeah, exactly. He's all and knows all. He's quite a wise guy, I'll tell you.
Very much fun.
Yes. He's one of my favorite people and one of my favorite guests as well. And I also want to congratulate you both on creating such a brilliant, insightful, and humorous book. It's mind-expanding. It covers a vast array of topics that are really important to us right now. And I highly recommend it to everybody to read. So now the subtitle is Our Positive Future and a Way to Get There from Here. We can start there or anywhere that you'd like to begin.
Well, Lance, this is an exciting story because we're in the midst of actually experiencing an evolutionary opportunity. I was going to say evolutionary leap, but I have to say it's an opportunity because we really don't know which way it's going to go. We're playing this one right down to the wire, and it's a very exciting time. So, and you can feel it in your gut, and everyone can, because it's actually, there's a biological thing called the biological imperative. And biologists don't know exactly, you know, where it is physically or how it works or anything, but we know it exists. And what it basically says is that organisms, when threatened, will automatically do something to stay alive. So even a bacterium, if you try to change the environment to kill a bacterium, it'll do everything to try and stay alive. So there's this built-in thing to stay alive. And when there's a threat, it engages us unconsciously at first, like something's going on. And so it's very interesting because, sure enough, this biological imperative is spreading globally right now, that people know that things are in a state of flux. And and it's a very exciting time because it's going to offer us an opportunity to change our path. And there's a profound significance as to why. And it's like so fundamental. It's like, oh, okay. And the reason why is science has recognized that we are precipitating into the sixth mass extinction of life on this planet. Five times on this planet, life essentially got wiped out and then started all over again. And they're just massive die-offs, and they're called mass extinctions. And the previous five were due to things such as comets or asteroids hitting the Earth and upsetting the ecosystem and blowing it all out and causing a mass extinction. And then new life comes from that, starts all over again. It's happened five times before. Right now, we're into the sixth mass extinction. And I really want to emphasize this point. It's not a suggestion. It's a scientific reality that this is going on. And when you say mass extinction, that means us too. So basically, it says that the ecosystem is turning upside down and won't support life the way it has been supported because it's just in a state of chaos and upheaval. Well, what's interesting is scientists have recognized, number one, is that that this mass extinction is actually due to human behavior. So it says, oh, my God, the way we have been treating each other and the way we've been treating Mother Nature has disrupted this stuff, you know.
And oh, we're so out of balance.
So, man, I mean, pillaging the garden is back to basically what it's all about. Everybody's ripping everything out of the garden and there's nothing left.
Right, right.
And yet, you say, well, okay, if we stay in the same path that we're going, this is the path that is causing the extinction, the way we are living. So it basically says, we're coming to a crossroads. We have to make a decision on how we're going to go into the future, because if we keep it the way it is, then the future's already written. It's like, well, going extinct. And this extinction isn't like way down the road. It's like even like within 35 years, it has been recognized that within 35 years, the fish that we use for food will be fished out of the ocean. An ocean without fish food, I mean, it's like almost like unthinkable. And yet, it's a total reality. It's, you know, you can measure it right now. So,
absolutely.
So it's a very interesting time because this movement in and being pushed into this other thing is also being orchestrated through the planets and the alignment. The 2012 story is all part of this. And there's a real interesting way of looking at it, because what we're seeing and focusing on is a building up of chaos. And if you focus on that, that gets really scary, because it's like, oh, you had this great structure in order, now it's all disappearing out there. And we would live in fear, and that's the way media is like presenting like all these crises, and everybody's like living in fear. And yet, there's a real interesting reason for this. So it's not an accident, it's a reason for this. And basically, Albert Einstein had a wonderful quote about it. He wrote, you can't solve the problems with the same thinking used in creating the problems. And basically, it just said, well, then the thinking has to change. Well, the thinking is what? The way we live. The institutions that support the way we live, because they were built to encourage a lifestyle that is now causing the problem. So why is it important? It's like, we can't get to the better level until the institutions that are driving us toward extinction have to collapse.
Exactly.
And we build something better. And it's the story of the caterpillar and the butterfly. Yeah, the cells, the billions of cells inside a caterpillar, when it's growing, it's like a world inside where each cell is like a miniature human, and there's billions of these cells working together, creating this harmony, and the environment of the caterpillar is growing, and everybody's all excited. I mean, it's just like economic go, go, go. And then one day the butterfly starts to stop eating, and the food stops coming in, and all the cells that had jobs, like the cells in the digestive system, are looking around going, well, there's no work going on here. All the plants are closing down, and all of a sudden this structure that was a highly organized civilization of billions of these cells, it starts to fall apart. And if you looked at it and you were in it, it would horrify you in a sense. And many of
the
cells actually commit a biological suicide. It's called apoptosis. It's sort of like a chemical push the button and then boom, it's a Kevorkian thing. They're gone. And the thing is, so here's in the middle of this caterpillar, there's all this chaos going on, and yet here's the beautiful part, because it relates to everyone that's listening online right now, that among the population, there are cells that are genetically identical in that caterpillar, but they see the world differently than the conventional caterpillar cells. And that these cells are called imaginal cells. And the imaginal cells have a design that's far better than the design of the caterpillar. And the imaginal cells coordinate all the other cells and take the structure that was a caterpillar and turn it into the more magnificent butterfly. Well, this is, you know, we're in caterpillar Earth right now on the threshold of the opportunity to do the butterfly.
Wow. Amazing. And I heard that they turn into a literal goo. inside the butterfly's cocoon. And if what you're saying is true, and of course it is, then and it only takes a certain amount of the cells to create this new form of life, then it may not take all of humanity to be aligned in one spontaneous moment, although it may. It may take a small percentage.
Well, that's the beautiful part, and we've already been recognizing that the people that have done this transcendental meditation research, okay, and what have they shown? That they can get the square root of 1% of a population, which is a relatively small number any level that you're working at, and you get the square root of 1% of that population and get them to get into a, mantra meditation state of peace, and what they've shown is that with that small number, getting in harmony and coherently having these thoughts of peace, that they actually affected the statistics of war and violence and crime whenever they did the experiment. So basically it says, it didn't take a large number of people, but it basically takes that number, square root of 1%, and when they start thinking coherently of a new vision, all the other cells will then start to assemble in that same vision.
Now, the scientists throw numbers out like 90 to 97% of our DNA is somehow not coherent. Could this be a storehouse of unused potential that is waiting for that square root of 1% to reassemble or reawaken and align with?
Yeah, well, it's a very exciting piece of that question of how do we make a human with the same number of genes that are essentially present in the smallest worms on the planet.
Right.
The question, how can you make it? Well, here's what that stuff is. Very simply, it looks like this. The genes are the blueprints to make the parts. So imagine like a store like Home Depot or something like that. You go in and you got all these different parts. And so the genes are the equivalent of making all the parts. The other information, the so-called junk DNA, which turns out to be the most important part, mm-hmm. is the equivalent of the blueprints of how you're going to use those genes and what you're going to build out of it. So I can use the same genes and create this little worm. And ultimately, with not many more genes, I can use the same building blocks and create a human. And so the whole thing is, so we're all using and sharing about the same kinds of genes, essentially, and yet the opportunity is that each of us can take the building plans and create from the building blocks all the different kinds of forms of life.
Wow. I found it quite astonishing to read on your website and also elsewhere and in the book that there are other forms of life, even a grain of rice, which are far more complicated and complex than a human being. Now, what differentiates, what creates that difference? I mean, is that tangible or is that something that unseen that we haven't yet been able to quantify?
Well, this is the new biology that's unfolding right now. Because if we ask the question from the current understanding of biology by the general public, the general public perceives of genes as these blueprints that control your fate and your characteristics, and that genes turn on and genes turn off. And in that belief system, it really is, genes are like self-actualizing. Genes make decisions, like a cancer gene turns on or something like that. So we see the genes as being in charge. But what has happened since about the 1990 on, a new understanding of genetics has come in that is so profoundly different, it changes the way life will be on this planet when we understand the meaning of it. And so the old vision was called genetic control, control by genes. Genes turn on, genes turn off. The new understanding realizes, genes are actually blueprints like we thought, but then the issue is, do blueprints turn on or off? And I bring that up, like, for example, go into an architect's office, and she's working on a blueprint, and you lean over her shoulder and you ask her, is that blueprint on or off? And of course, you get looked at like, what are you talking about? It's a blueprint. There's no on and off. And it's like, this all of a sudden changes the world because, like, genes don't control anything. Genes are blueprints. They're just like blueprints from a house. Blueprints, if we believe the genes work the way they did, it would be like taking a set of blueprints and driving by a building site, throwing the blueprints into the yard, drive down the road, and come back in a few weeks, and there's this house right there. You know, it's like the genes created it. It's like, no, they're blueprints. and so the new science says, well, then how do you build and control all this? Well, it's a new science called epigenetic control, not genetic control, epigenetic control. It's just coming out into the public right now because it's so profound in its meaning. So what does it mean? Well, epi, the prefix, means above. And so if I say genetic control, that's control by genes. If I say epigenetic control, that says control above the genes. And it's like, well, what does that mean? It says the genes are like blueprints, and the mind is like a contractor that reads the blueprints. Mm. And so as you perceive your world, your mind will adjust the genetics of your biology to create your perception. So the genes are potentials. They can create anything. And what you create with it is a complement to what you perceive. And you say, well, okay, Bruce, you stepped off the edge now. There's a lot of people out there. It's like, okay, your mind is turning on the genes, and it sounds like, oh, what is all that? So if I could take just 2-3 minutes here, because if you understand the meaning of the science, how simple this experiment was that I did when my life changed. It was a simple experiment. Basically, what I did is I was cloning stem cells, and that was back in 1967, like over 40 years ago. And there's just a few of us in the world that understood anything about stem cells. Only recently have they become something. But so I was way back there with these guys with some stem cells. And what did I do is I'd isolate just one stem cell and put it into a tissue culture dish all by itself. The cell divides every about 10 hours. And then I go, okay, so after 10 days, 2 weeks, there must be like thousands of cells in the dish. But what's unique is that every cell is genetically identical to every other cell because they all came from the same parent. So now I have genetically identical cells, thousands of them. So here's the experiment, and it blew my mind. I take the population, split them up into three separate petri dishes, and I change the environment for the cells, meaning the culture medium. And the culture medium to a cell is like our environment with the air and the water and the biology of the ecosphere around us. So the cell's environment is they live in this culture fluid. So by changing the chemical composition of the culture fluid, I had three dishes. And so I had three different compositions of environment. And in one dish, the cells form muscle. In another dish, the stem cells form bone. And in a third dish, the stem cells form fat cells. And it's like, okay. And then you say a simple question, what controls the fate of the cells? And the answer turns out very simply, well, they were genetically identical, so the genes couldn't have done that because they all had the same genes. The only thing that was different was the environment. And so it's like, it's the environment and the cell were interacting, and the environment information was used to engage the genetic expression of the cell. So in different environments, the cells engage in different expressions. And so we say, yeah, if I take a healthy dish, a plastic dish of my stem cells from a healthy environment and move it into a not-so-good environment, a less-than-optimal environment, the cells get sick. Now, if you were like a miniature cell in that dish and you were like the doctor cell, and the cells would say, what drugs should I take to make me better? And here's the wonderful answer. You take no drugs. You just take the dish and return it back to the original good condition it was in. You know, bring it back to the good environment. The cells become a reflection of the environment. The health of the cell is a reflection of the environment that it lives in. So now I say, okay, cool. I move the dish to a good environment and the cells get well. I move it to a bad environment, they get sick. So the environment and the cells are lockstep, and the culture medium composition determines the fate. And that's cool. That's plastic petri dishes and all that. Now here comes the jump. And the jump is this. when we look at ourselves in the mirror, Lance, if you look in the mirror, there's a single human being given the name Lance looking back at you. I see Bruce, mm-hmm. all the listeners out there see themselves as a single mm-hmm. human being. And then I go, well, it's an illusion because, in fact, while we see ourselves as a single entity, the truth is we're actually made out of 50 trillion cells. It's the cells that are the living elements. When I say the word me, I'm saying the word. I'm talking for a community of 50 trillion mm. cells. So mm-hmm. here's the jokey part that's like profound, and it goes like this. Okay, so then the human body is the equivalent of a skin-covered petri dish with 50 trillion cells in it. And the culture medium is called the blood. And the composition of the culture medium determines the genetic expression and the behavior. Okay? Now here comes the next step. I say, and what controls the blood's chemistry? And the answer is the brain is the chemist that releases the hormones and the signals and the regulators that control the environment.
Right.
And I go, yeah, but what causes the brain to release different chemicals? And the answer is perception. It's what you see that causes the release of the chemistry. So I'm sitting here, my eyes closed, and all of a sudden I open up my eyes and there's a saber-toothed tiger. My perception is, oh my God! And what's going to happen? I'm going to release, in this case, fight or flight response, which causes stress hormones to be sent from my body. Okay? And the stress hormones like histamine and epinephrine and cortisol, they change the genetics and behavior of the cell to get the organism into a protection mode, get it ready to run, okay? And then I go, okay, what happens if I'm sitting there, my eyes closed, and I then open up my eyes, and before me is my beautiful partner, Margaret, and I see her, all of a sudden, I release different chemicals. I release the bonding chemicals of oxytocin. I release dopamine, the feel-good chemicals. I release mm-hmm. growth hormones, the maintenance of the body chemicals. So basically it says, wait, I changed the culture medium by whatever I saw when I opened my eyes. And the answer is yes. And then the question is, but then we go to an interesting story. So, well, two people can look at the same environment and they see completely different things. And when they see different things, they release different chemistry. So two people in the same environment can have totally different biologies going on based on what they see. And then comes the scary part. The scary part goes like this. If your mind makes a misinterpretation, do the cells know that there was an error? And the answer is no. What do the cells know? They just got the signal from the brain. I open up my eyes in that moment of like haziness, let's say coming out of sleep. I look and all of a sudden I think I see a saber-toothed tiger in front of me. In that moment, just like, oh! You know, all of a sudden all this adrenaline is running through me. And then all of a sudden I just, you know, like, oh, it was just a fuzzy thing and it was somebody I know. It was just like an image just got transposed. And nothing, there wasn't anything really wrong. But my cells didn't know that. My cells got the full jolt of all the adrenaline running through the system.
Yeah.
So the idea about it is this. If we hold beliefs or perceptions that are not true, we adjust our biology as if they were true. And the issues about that is if we hold beliefs that are stressful, then the biology that results from these perceptions, whether they're real or not, the perceptions will lead to chemistry that actually is what we now recognize the primary cause of disease in human biology. It's not from the genes. The primary cause of disease is the way our lifestyle is and the way we live in our world. This is the cause of the disease, and yet we keep looking for genetic causes and genetic cures when it's like, no, it was just lifestyle. That's basically what it was. Boy, did I ramble on that one.
This is really fascinating because I have heard before that the brain can't distinguish between a real event and one that's imaginary. So that would include television and theater and movies and so on, wouldn't it? And wars and...
And belief support.
It's focusing on some horrible events.
Yes.
Which create a lot of fear. And then also, isn't not true that the bulk of the food that we eat has very little nutrition in it? yes, having milked out the phytonutrients out of the soil many decades ago, and then we don't even know how much is genetically modified.
So we're in a crisis there, aren't we? And it is, but why is it important? Because it's forcing us to do something different. And what is that something different? In that case, it says start to eat local, start to eat organic. And then all of a sudden you start to realize, I don't have to be a victim of that. I have choices.
Right.
And this is what's so good about the new genetics. The old genetics was the genes controls who you are. You're a victim. But why?
Because
you didn't pick the genes. You can't change them. And they determine your life. So you're just like waiting like a gene time bomb that waits for a gene to cause something. And that's the old belief. The new belief says it's your perception that interfaces the cells via the blood's chemistry. And why is that relevant? Because I can change my perception. And it's like, well, then you can change your biology by the way you perceive your life. And if you change your perceptions, you change your biology. And the answer is, it's exactly what epigenetics is all about.
Wow. Well, now, I just read today that scientists have created the first artificial DNA molecule.
Oh, boy, that's really pushing that they created something synthetic. It's a tour de force, technically, okay?
Yeah.
And what Venter did was he made a copy of a chromosome from a different species. So he synthesized, he took the original chromosome from the first species and put it into a chemical soup that caused many, many copies of it to be made. So they were being made synthetically actually by a machine at some point. They found the sequence, they made a sequence, and so they copied the original DNA of something else, and then they put their copy into another cell. So did they synthetically make a new cell? And the answer is no. They took a copy, they were able to synthesize a copy of an existing cell and put it into another cell. So there's a big difference because it would suggest like, oh, I know all the things of how to make a cell work. In fact, you didn't know that because you just copied this other one. You don't even know how the other one works. So you copied it. I say technically, really cool, okay? Except for the fact is, they don't know how it works, so they just took out the cell's chromosome, put in the copied version, and then it just took off like the original version. But the idea is, so if you ask the question, well, do you know how this really works? And the answer is, well, not really. You just put this piece of DNA in there. And it's like, so I get upset about it because, it's just a big, it's a lot of publicity stuff. But it also scares me because they don't know how it works. That's exactly it. I mean, the issue
they're
is
going to continue messing around with it to see what they can add some together to create some kind of new life form. And that, combined with nanotechnology, with biology and DNA, that's could be a scary prospect.
It's more scary than helpful for this reason. They don't know how the existing system works.
Right.
And so the idea of trying to change pieces of the programming is like putting a virus, which it is, in fact, that's what they're doing. They're putting genes in via viruses. And I say, well, okay, good. How effective are the viruses in your computer? And all of a sudden, it's like, I could jam the damn machine. It's like, this is exactly the problem. They don't know how it works, but they're still trying to change the information. It's like, but you don't know how it creates this fabulous structure from these few building blocks. It's like, and yet you want to change the life of it. It's like, dangerous.
It's pretty frightening.
Yes. Yeah.
And then some scientists, in fact, there's a fairly large group of them, are working to push toward an event horizon in which artificial intelligence is more powerful than we are and takes over, because they see that as the solution to our problems, such as war and food production and so on and so forth.
But
we're talking about kind of a Matrix-type world, aren't we?
That's exactly what you're talking about. Boy, I'd stay away from that one right away, you know. It's just basically this is so misunderstood reality that's going on here. And that kind of thinking is the kind of thinking that is even pushing us closer to the edge of that extinction that's modifying the environment, because biologically we are, and biologically and in a sense spiritually, we are made in the image of an environment. That's a biological reality, if you understand how the proteins of a body respond to the environment. So every protein responds to some environmental signal. So basically our physical structure is a complement to the environmental signals. Well, reason why this becomes critical is if we destroy the environment as we are doing, then our biology is no longer complementary to the environment. And
well, but we've got big pharmaceutical companies to fix us.
Well, you know,
and we can always have a war to kill off the excess humans.
Well, this is, you know, this unfortunate thinking, because they're using some very outdated and actually unproven beliefs that are really based on a Darwinian theory that says, hey, look, we're all going to go to hell because there's going to be so many people and not enough food that we're really going to have those fights out in the streets until the death and the final victory of the fittest. You know, that's a grand German Darwinian nightmare. And the reality
is
that that's not even valid science anymore.
Right.
And basically, it says, you know, their belief system, populations keep growing and growing and growing. Yeah, well, tell me about the United States. You know, it's like when we were in a better harmony situation, I think the population is going up higher now, because anytime organisms are in threat, the population is increased, and they reproduce at younger ages, because this is nature's way of seeing that the biological imperative is revealing that we are threatened, and how do you keep the species alive? And the answer is reproduce more.
More of them.
And then basically, then you go back and you say, well, what about in the United States? And the answer is, at one point, we were below 2 children for every family, which is just replacing the existing parents, right? And I say, well, how come we got so low? And the answer is, because they didn't understand something about population control. Population increases when life is not when life is hard and difficult. So when you live in India, you're going to have 5, 6, 7 kids, because each kid could barely scrape out a living on their own.
Right.
But if you can have 7 of them scrape out, and they just give you a little piece of theirs, then you can survive. So it's called Social Security. And when we have a country, you know, like when the United States was in a much better economic situation, the concept of Social Security, what happened to the population? They stopped reproducing, because the population will tend to stay stable when the security of life is made available.
Right.
So it's like there they are trying to say, stop having children, use condoms, and all this stuff, like, you know, like if you're going to stop sex. The answer is no. All you have to do is give them some assurance of their survivability, that they're safe, and the reproduction rate will essentially stop. It'll go right down
to when everybody is taken care of, and food is not a problem, and good water and a roof over your head, that would resolve itself, instead of pulling the rug out from underneath those who are less fortunate and sucking out the Hoover vacuum cleaner into the banks.
Yeah, well, that's the old story, isn't it, Lance? You know,
that's very old,
and it's coming to a crescendo, and so it's funny, because I sit here looking at this, you know, with the excitement of wow, it's falling apart, and the reason why I'm excited about it is because I know we cannot build the more sustainable structure on the foundations of the world we have today, which is a Darwinian competitive world that says you got to beat the other person or they're going to kill you. It's like that's a belief system, you know? So look at the world fighting and doing all this.
Exactly. And that's an outdated or old paradigm that isn't working, obviously, and it needs to collapse, like, as you said, for something new to come up, like the phoenix out of the ashes. Now, another thing that you might know more about, obviously, than I do, is that everything is connected, interconnected at the quantum level. So what we do to each other, whether it's here to there or, you know, within our own families, affects everything, doesn't it?
This is the new biology and the new physics coming together. Because in the old physics, the ones that most of us learned in school, was a Newtonian physics based on a physical, mechanical, machine-like universe with parts and pieces. And I could talk about this part and not talk about that part, like they're totally two separate things. And yet, quantum physics says that's an illusion, because the physical part is actually energy itself. It's just a funny form of energy. It's a focused energy. And and so the what you see as matter is actually energy, but as energy, it's also connected via the energy waves to everything else in what is called the field, which is the invisible forces that quantum physics emphasizes as the shaper of our physical reality. And you go, well, okay, wait, that doesn't, what does that mean? I go, the old belief Newtonian physics said the universe is made out of little atoms, which are like billiard balls that bang into each other and move around and create life and all that stuff. Quantum physics has a different understanding. It says that there aren't really physical balls at all. They're all just energy, and they're all interconnected. This is one whole giant energy universe where everything is connected. You cannot step outside of the universe and look back in. And if you can't do that, that means you are part of it. And this is why quantum physics is bringing in a such a profound new insight to our world. It's been there since 1930, but the population wasn't ready for it. But now it's time. And the recognition that quantum physicists tell us is, look, the world that we're living in is based on our consciousness, that we're manifesting through our collective beliefs. And when we have a collective belief in a war exists. And if a war exists and I'm sitting here with a belief I want peace, my little vote doesn't matter very much because it's a collective belief. So we have been culturally programmed to buy a way of life, which is a Darwinian life that says that person has more because they deserve it. It's like, wow, right, that's really cool.
Right.
But we bought that. And then we let the people get as much as they can. But how do you get as much as you can? Well, you take it from everybody else. And, that's called the world we live in. And here's why my book, why I like the book. It doesn't just say, okay, here it is, folks. Here's all the problems. This is great. Look at all the crashing and the chaos. The book says that this is a normal process. And if you understand what is going on, then the future takes on a completely different appearance. And what's really going on is this. There's an evolutionary jump happening right now. And the reason why it's evolution is because we hit a crisis. And the significance of a crisis, as we've talked about, is you can't continue what you're doing because that's creating the crisis. So here's your opportunity to do something different. Well, that's the opportunity for evolution. And why this becomes very important for us right now is that I said, well, if the change does come and all this stuff comes down, what are we going to put in its place? And it's like, ancient mystics have always had a saying the answers lie within.
This is
the fun part, because I say, well, how can a few billion of us on this planet learn to live in harmony and peace and all that? And then I go, inside your body are 50 trillion cells. Every cell, essentially, virtually every cell in your body has all the same functions that you have that you express as a human. Cells have a digestive system, respiratory, excretory, nervous system, musculoskeletal system, an endocrine system. They even have immune systems. So what does that mean? A cell has all the same functions as you. It's just smaller. So basically, it's a miniature human. And then I go in and I tell you, guess what? Look inside your body. You got 50 trillion cells. Every cell has a job. Every cell gets paid. But every cell gets the basics. Every cell gets food. Every cell gets protection. Every cell gets health care. And no matter what George Bush was trying to say, in this real environment, it's an environment where no cell is left behind. And why is it relevant? Because I give you an example that if we applied this today, how it would change the world. And it goes like this. The biology has coins of the realm, they call it. Money in the form of energy molecules. They're just units of energy. They're just like dollar bills. You can buy something with this energy. So the body creates the energy from its work. Now, what's interesting is this. There is no wealth in the system until every cell gets the basics of life.
Wow.
In other words, the system can produce this energy, this wealth, but there's no wealth in the system until every cell gets the basics of life. Food, place to sleep, a job, you know, something to do, and get paid for it. Now, why the next step becomes relevant is this. So not all the cells get the same pay. Skin cells don't work as hard as neurons, so neurons get lots of energy, these ATP molecules. And in fact, neurons make so much energy money that they actually have entourages. They have other cells that support them and they pay them. Okay, so the idea is, so it says everybody gets the basics and then the amount extra above that is based on your job. But then here comes the neat part. But a cell makes a limit of how much it can have. It has more than it needs. It has more than it needs. But once it exceeds what it needs to a certain level, then guess what? All the extra energy is returned to the entire community. And the community bank, and I have deposits. Unfortunately, they're called fat deposits, but that's a community bank that's on me right now. So it says, okay, my cells did really pretty good, and we got a lot in the bank. And the relevance about this is that's the equivalent of the central resources that cover things like if I break my leg. Like, you know, if I break my leg and I have 50 trillion cells, you think, well, are they going to get together? And some cells, I don't want to pay for that. and the reality is, no, of course not. Basically, it all comes out of the central resources. So basically, it comes down and says this. There is no wealth in the system until every cell is guaranteed a life right. And then once that's guaranteed, then cells can accumulate extra wealth until they reach a limit.
Right.
And then past that limit, all the other wealth then really goes into the central bank, which covers the entire 50 trillion cells if they need something, including making another human. And I say, wow. And
that's
they do
amazing.
This. It is. And it's interesting because it was funny. I just recently saw Michael Moore's Corporations, A Love Story.
I did,
and
too, just yesterday.
Did you really?
Yes.
That part that got me was, until before Reagan, the rich paid, the very, very rich, paid 92% taxes. And as they showed, it's like, well, that didn't make them poor. They were still as rich as anybody could be, even with the 92% taxes taken out.
Yeah.
But that 92% went back into the community bank. So guess what? Before Reagan, our economy was much more like a healthy body in a sense that we were entitled to make money. Unfortunately, there were no limits and caps, but the limits came when they did make that much money. Then their tax rate was so high that was the putting the limitation back on. And it went back into the system, and it worked. And it worked so much more beautifully than where we are now, because now the rich don't pay any taxes. And yet they're the ones that suck the energy out of the system. So a single individual can have like $60 billion, and then there's like a billion people out there with $60, you know, for their whole life.
Right.
So basically says, well, that doesn't happen in the body. The cells are in a community, and we have lost community, and that's what the evolution is going to thrust upon us to get through this time that's coming. The first stages are build the communities back up.
That is so beautifully said, because we have the model. According to what you're saying, we have the template right inside us that's working and has always worked. And, you know, the Native Americans have talked about this since the beginning of time, about returning to the earth and the energy of the mother and the father. And
absolutely.
And
they were dead right on the science, because we actually did come from Father Sky and Mother Earth. And the way it works out is like, it sounds like mythology, but I go, no. Before there was life on this planet, the chemistry was called inorganic chemistry. The chemistry of rocks and dirt and minerals and things like that, you know. Inorganic, not living.
Mm.
Where did the life come from? Something called organic chemistry. I said, yeah, but where did that come from? Ah, that's the result of sunlight, the energy of sunlight, being fused into inorganic chemistry, and that enlightened chemistry is called organic chemistry. And so what does it represent? It's the building blocks of life. And but what does it represent? Mother Earth, and the light is from Father Sky. Wow. Like, wow, they were right. They knew it, baby.
And they were happy.
Well, that's the whole idea. That's why they founded the United States. The United States was founded because this period back in the early 1700s called the Age of Enlightenment spoke of a world where there was harmony and beauty, a utopia where a person could make the best of their lives because nobody would be repressing them. They would go out and it was in the period of Enlightenment, this philosophy came from Rousseau, a French philosopher, Jean-Jacques Rousseau. And then everybody says, wow, that was such a beautiful vision. Where did Rousseau find that vision? And here's the fun part. Rousseau's philosophy of Enlightenment was built on the Native American culture.
Oh, really? I did not.
Absolutely. He talked about what was called the noble savage, and he was talking about these people who lived the fullest of lives on the land in the garden, and it was so inspiring that it sent the Europeans to go to the United States, create a United States based on the Indian principles, because there was already a United States when the white people got here, but it was the Iroquois Nation. It was about six different Indian tribes who had for 500 years created a nation of states where each tribe was a state, and how they lived in harmony for that 500 years till the white people got there to emulate them. But we built a constitution on the principles of the Indian nation, and then we killed the Indians. So the dream went bad.
You slaughtered the buffalo.
And we killed everything because we brought European sensibilities into a more pure world of the Native Americans.
Well, that's the old story, isn't it? The Mayans, the Incas, the who knows how many indigenous cultures have been almost wiped out from the desire to acquire what they have.
Exactly, and then you know, and then take that, drive it using that Western white European mentality of it's rightfully mine because I stole it from you, and that's it.
Right. Yeah. Ownership is 9/10 of the law, and who then the one who dies with the most toys, etc.
You've just defined the world that we're living in right now.
And it's a horror show.
and it's going extinct, and yet it says, but we are doing this. Nature is pushing this, and most importantly for young people, which I call the young people because now I'm old, but it starts with the alphabet generations, generation X, Y, Z, whatever.
Oh, and then, right.
These generations have always had a problem because they find they can't get into the structure very easily. They go to college, they do all the right things, there's no jobs, there's four or five of them sharing an apartment, trying to get by. And they're very, very upset psychologically because of their being not able to get into the system. And yet they don't realize they play one of the most important roles in the evolution that's happening right now for a very simple reason. You can't change the structure if everybody is holding on to the structure.
Right.
And yet now we have this massive population, probably half the population, that is not part of the structure. And the relevance is that allows for the structure to crash and the creation of something new. So there's a lot of interesting responsibility and power for these young people who presently find themselves disempowered and seemingly disenfranchised. It's like, well, don't blink your eyes because it's going to be such a radical turnaround coming right now.
You know, it does feel that way, and as we head closer to 2010, it seems that everything is accelerating like on a merry-go-round, and if you're not careful, you'll get thrown off if you're at the edges.
Yeah, it's time for being aware. It's time for starting to be more conscious, because here's the interesting thing about the evolution. It's not the evolution of the human being. The human body has already evolved. That's what it is, The evolution that's in front of us is the community of human beings. It's called humanity. Yeah. And we're repeating an evolutionary pattern where individual units assemble into more complex units, which then become an individual unit and assemble with other more complex units. So the human beings are now totally recognizing that the evolution that's in front of us is to realize that each human is a cell in the body mm-hmm. of something called humanity. It's mm-hmm. our coming together and forming that humanity that is our opportunity, because look at it this way. 50 trillion individual cells came together to form a community called the human body.
Mm-hmm.
And now the human body is the single entity, but the next level of evolution is to take the new single entities, each human, and mm-hmm. make them part of a giant superorganism, and that's what biologists mm-hmm. describe it as, called humanity. So our evolution is not individual. Our evolution is a collective evolution. And if what we look at as the evolving thing called humanity, which is by definition an animal because we're not plants, so this large super organism animal is trying to evolve, but guess what's happening at this moment? It, like most people that are sick on this planet, is suffering from autoimmune disease.
Oh, yeah.
Autoimmune disease is self-destruction, where the cells tear apart each other. And it's like, yes, and civilization at this moment is facing autoimmune disease because we are killing each other rather than supporting the whole life community of humans as one body. We're like one nation, which represents like an organ attacking another organ. So it's like the liver cells going into the pancreas and try to capture the Isles of Langerhans. And so basically our world is a world that hasn't recognized but is learning to recognize the unity of human life. And when we acquire that, and then we work as a community, then the kinds of consequences that you can see in a human body where community of 50 trillion citizens is working in harmony. Think about it this way. When a human body is blissed out, 50 trillion individual sentient cells are each blissed out. So it says, my God, 50 trillion cells can be blissed out, and here we can't get 7 billion people, you know, to stop killing each other. This is the transition that we are going to be experiencing if we succeed.
Yeah, that makes so much sense to me. And do you feel that part of that evolutionary process includes the Earth as well, that some kind of interconnection with all the cosmos around us?
Absolutely, because quantum physics tells us of the entanglement of everything, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Astrology, which is, you know, the government would love to say that's a bunch of, you know, woo-woo craziness.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, every leader of every country has a personal astrologer, and they've always been that way.
Right.
Astrology works very well to see masses, what happens in masses of people. And the significance is, yes, because we evolved in these energy fields that come from the sun, and the energy, like the sun is a broadcasting device, okay? So we can put up radio telescopes and hear the sound of the sun coming to us, right? Well, the cells hear the same thing. So basically, so we're getting our information from the sun, and the planets are like magnets that change the focus, and as they change the focus, the information changes. So this is where our biology is responding to the fluctuations in these fields. So there's a big thing about astrology, and you want to then know, well, then the big astrology is 2012.
Mm-hmm.
That's the super overall overriding astrology, because the most astrology we talk about is just within our own solar system, you know, with the conventional planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Mars, Earth, etc. And yet, the solar system is part of a larger complex called the Milky Way, a galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
as much as a planet is affected within a solar system is affected by all the other galaxies in the solar system. And so 2012 is a point where the solar system that we're in has been traveling below the equator of the Milky Way, which is like a flat disk. And 2012, we're at the level of the equator, and after 2012, we move above. Well, that's like going from a north pole to a south pole in a magnet, and that changes the polarity. So we're in a state of flux. And see what happens the end of July. Might be the precipitating chaos that will kick the whole thing. It's a possibility because at the end of July, there's a major astrological alignment with...
there's a grand cross, isn't there?
It's a grand cross, and they're in perfect, 90-degree, 180-degree oppositions, and this produces some very... I read one astrologer, which really just said, look, everyone is going to be affected by this. Everyone is going to be affected by this. So it's an interesting thing, and you can see if you follow the news how the intensity is building up. Now, whether we'll manifest or not, hey, it's all based on probability. So we don't know.
Another thing is the solar cycle is supposed to reach its maximum in 2012. So we have that to look forward to, too, although it's been awfully quiet.
Quiet before the storm, perhaps.
Well, yeah.
So it's like it says, okay, it's not just humans. Gaia,
right,
as a living organism, the planet, is going through an evolutionary shakeup right now.
Yep, and it's about time.
But you know, we affect the planet, and it's really wonderful because things like the Global Coherence Project recognize that when a population starts to focus on something like 9/11 or the death of Princess Diana, Obama's election, that when the population starts to focus on a big event, it changes the readout of these special devices called random number generators. And they start creating patterns in the numbers when the machine is designed to only make random numbers, and somehow humans, when they get coherent in following a point or a story or what's going on, actually change the readout of these things, which are actually part of the quantum field. So it basically says, when we get enough people coherent, we can then create a different reality than the field that is behind us, that we can change the field. And that's what a kind of thing that humanity can do. Humanity as a collective group, sharing some very sustainable beliefs and patterns like the cells in the human body, when working in that collective harmony, can then manifest a different reality.
Wow. Well, that seems like a great place to segue off into the end of the next reality. We're just about out of time. Is there anything important that you'd like to share with the listeners? And also, would you mention your website again so that everybody can...
Thank you, Lance.
Sure.
Just leave it like this. The evolution that's in front of us is not an evolution that will occur by sitting in an armchair and waiting for something to happen. Because this is the unique evolution where we as cells are participants in the process. So everyone is going to have to participate. So it really says that we're moving into a new world, but it's going to take us to do it. And so it's very exciting because we are in a real sense manifesting a new reality by our collective abilities. And I see that as a wonderful thing because I think the average human in this world, I think they all want about the same thing. So I think that same thing being just some peace and harmony and some food and to wake up and enjoy the planet, that collective belief can manifest a reality that expresses that.
Wonderful. And a little love.
Yeah, the love part of it, that's what holds all the cells together.
Wonderful. Well, we could use more of that, of course.
My website, Lance, is BruceLipton.com. It's very simple. BruceLipton.com.
Bruce, you have been just amazing tonight. I wish I had another 2 hours to talk with you. You're just amazing.
No, it's just fun stuff.
Oh, it is. You're going to have to come back and talk again.
I like that idea, Lance. So, it's fun stuff, and we'll see what will happen between this time and the next time.
We're going
to give an evolution update.
And get coherent.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Don't get the latest book. Get coherent. I mean, do get the latest book.
That's an interesting one.
All right. Thanks again, Bruce.
Thanks, Lance.
All right. Good night, everybody, and stay tuned for Jim Gilliland. He's always got an exciting show for us. And get coherent. Good night, everybody.